Jake Bomick with the guys on the Fan. Going to be joined by Logan Petoskey, Cleveland Guardians on SI, as well the broadcaster for the high affiliate of the Guardians, the Lake County Captains, here in just a few moments. A lot to ask Logan again. Some exciting news coming up from his end as well. So we'll get to all that. And why waste any time? Let's go out. North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is Logan Petoskey, and he joins us now. Logan, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Jake? Not too much, and thanks for having me on once again.
Always a good time, always a good opportunity to talk to you. And with spring training right around the corner, you know, we're in it. I guess the bulk of spring training right around the corner, the regular season around the corner. We're right there. It's a great time to talk baseball. It's a great day to talk baseball because we actually got some decent weather in Cleveland, so you can't be mad.
Absolutely not. And, you know, by the way, too, I mean, it's been a pleasure being on with you a couple times, but this first time is, you know, you getting the new gig as the overtime host, so I got to give you a huge congratulations, you know, before you start getting into everything. So well deserved, my man.
Very much appreciated, Logan. Thank you very much. As we head into this and trying to kind of find out who's going to be playing second base, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, just as it related to the Andrés Giménez trade, as we talked about a month ago, but the Guardians right now not really being shy about testing the waters with who they have through spring training, which is not out of the norm. Three games, six different guys have played the position. Who would you right now consider sort of the front runner for that?
Right. You know, that's certainly a fair question to ask, and it's also one that I think you have to put an asterisk by because, you're only three games into about a full month slate. So much can change during this time. I mean, just as far as how players have performed this spring, in his first two games, Gabriel Arias is seeing the ball pretty well, hitting it very well. He had a moonshot of a home run today off a potential Cy Young contender in Zach Gallen. What, it went over 440 feet and 116 off the bat. I mean, if he can give you that kind of consistent pop off the bat, 445, 116 miles an hour, if he can give it to you consistently, that'd be great. But he did play third base today, and you had Angel Martinez at second. So, you know, for me, I'm going to say it's still way too early to tell just because there's so much that can happen this spring. It's, you know, very much unpredictable, but that's what this time is for. You have so much depth at that position. It's just trying to figure out those kind of nitpicky things of who do we see as the best fit, and playing a full Cactus League slate is the perfect way to figure that out.
There's so many options there. Like I said, six different guys so far, but we know how spring training works, Logan. Not every single one of those guys is truly fully in the mix to start at second base at the major league level. For a lot of guys, it's reps. For a lot of guys, it's just sort of getting out there. I don't know that you, maybe hits 800 in spring training, you're putting Travis Bazan on the major league roster. Like, how many of those guys right now are a legitimate, viable option to start and on opening day at second base, and just how up in the air sort of is this battle between those guys?
You know, if you're a Guardians fan and you were looking into spring training, what is the biggest battle on the team this year? It is that second base spot. Obviously, losing a guy like Andrés Giménez, a previous All-Star, best defensive, arguably overall defensive player in the game, those are not easy shoes to fill right away. But if it's me taking a look at it, I would say you have at least three of those options who really have a strong shot at making that opening day start. If you were asking me, I would probably say, in no particular order yet, mind you, there's so much spring to go, you have Juan Brito, a name that's been mentioned quite often, had an incredible season in AAA last year with Columbus. Angel Martinez made his big league debut last year, and he's kind of that utility man role, but he came up through the minors primarily as a middle infielder and third baseman, so he has plenty of reps there. And then Gabriel Arias, I think, has to be another option that's coming to mind. There's a lot of talent and potential there, and there have been plenty of flashes of it during his time with the Guardians. I think it's just a matter of consistency with him. If he's able to find that, that's another really strong option that you could potentially have at that spot at second base.
Well, good note. Do you think it's going to go as a way of the Guardians name sort of an opening day second baseman, and you'll see that guy take a majority of the starts to start the year? Or do we potentially get into a spot this year where they almost platoon second base, at least for the opening part, until a guy sort of separates himself?
That's a great question. And like you said, I mean, there are kind of multiple ways to go about it if you so choose. And I feel like with the versatility that a lot of these options have, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think if you kind of have like that rotation of like, hey, we know that, hey, you know, if they got down to two options or something, like we know we got two strong options here. And, you know, we saw this past year, Stephen Vogt not afraid to use the bench when needed. So, you know, I don't think it would be a total surprise if that's something that they chose to do. But again, so much spring ball left to be played. You've got just over a month left, I believe, and time's ultimately going to tell who knows what's going to happen. But really looking forward to it because, like we've talked about, so many options, and there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent there for sure. It's just a matter of who's going to win that battle to get that opening day spot.
I'm excited to see it. Another thing I was excited to see, to a degree at least, we got our first look at Tristan McKenzie in the first spring training game. He's out there for a couple of innings. Obviously, the last 2 years have not gone the way that Guardians fans have wanted, have not gone the way that Tristan himself wanted. How did he look in the limited action that we got to see from him?
Well, I'll tell you this, just looking back at what Stephen Vogt had to say after that contest, I mean, it was really just one pitch. It was one pitch against one of the league's best hitters and arguably a future face of the league in Ellie De La Cruz. That was his only blemish. I mean, that was the only blemish on his stat line, just allowing one hit, one run, and it was a strong home run from him. But strong command of the strike zone. He threw 24 pitches, and 18 of them were for strikes, and he reached 95 miles an hour four times. And I think that's something that's compelling, just considering he's had a couple of injuries over the past 2 years or so, and just trying to reestablish that 2022 self. There's obviously that physical component of obviously the arm has to heal and get back to its normal self, but you have to think there's kind of that mental spot too, where he's trying to regain that composure and that confidence that he once had. Because I mean, when we saw him in 2022, he looked like a legitimate ace at plenty of times. So just finding that consistent rhythm again, and the fact that Vogt after the game on Saturday against the Reds saying, you know, but I thought all in all he looked phenomenal. That's got to mean a lot, you know, especially from that mental standpoint. And if he's saying that too, seeing it at field level, watching him consistently throughout the spring, that's got to be a great sign of potentially what's to come for him.
Logan Mitoski is the play-by-play guy for the Lake County Captains, the Guardians High affiliate as well, running for Cleveland Guardians and SI. You mentioned what Vogt had to say. That's a big part for me, too, is just hearing your manager speak so highly. And it honestly brought the question to my mind. I don't know that I had ruled it out, but I considered it almost a long shot. But does that almost open things up to see Tristan in the starting rotation, even at the start of next year?
I think it's certainly fair. I mean, when he was also talking post-game this past Saturday, Vogt was saying that, like, it's a camp. There's a lot of opportunity for lots of guys. And he said that Tristan is right in that mix, you know, regarding getting opportunities during the spring. So, I mean, if McKenzie really puts together a great spring, he certainly could put together a case to be back in rotation to start the season. I know that second base is really the main battle for the Guardians this spring, but, you know, that kind of fourth, fifth spot in the starting rotation, those certainly could go a number of ways, given, like, acquisitions made this offseason, and obviously the depth that we have in our minor league ranks as well.
I guess then I just look at this starting rotation. I wasn't overly thrilled with the way that it was built out through free agency this year, just because I don't think you went and got the most solid pieces that you look at and you go, oh, that guy's a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, right? Slade Ciccone, Jacob Junis. You sort of looked at these guys as almost the in-betweeners. They've come out of the bullpen. They've started. How, in your view, do you look at the way that the Guardians address the starting pitching and where they're at right now compared to maybe where they were at last year?
Well, you know, I do like the way, I mean, it is pretty tough losing a pair of starting arms that got you to the playoffs and pitched in the playoffs last year in Alex Cobb and Matthew Boyd. Guardians bringing in a handful of veteran pitchers to try to be able to reestablish that back end of the starting rotation. You know, I really think it comes down to the pitching development and all the staff that's around pitching. I mean, a pitching coach like Carl Willis, arguably the best in the game at what he does, getting the most out of these types of arms that, you know, you mentioned, kind of like those in-between guys. Like they could kind of start, kind of be out of the bullpen. That's the beauty of, I think, Cleveland's pitching development. It's arguably the best in Major League Baseball, and I think just continuing to get the most out of what these guys have can, you know, help the team regain that stability at the back end of that rotation. But, I mean, you have that, and then you potentially have, who knows, you might have a player to, you know, break out from AAA. Like, I think somebody like Doug Nikhazy, who's probably going to get ample opportunity this spring, could be someone to look out for, say, hey, someone like him could find his stride at some point next year, or this season, I mean, 2025. We are in it, of course, here.
Yeah, we're in that in-between era. It's all right. We're in that in-between. You never know. Is it next year? Is it this year? Where are we at?
For sure, yeah, exactly. You know, we're still early in the year. But anyway, that back end of the rotation, certainly up for grabs as well, and excited to see how, you know, some of these new acquisitions end up faring this spring, and even some of the guys at those upper ranks of the minor leagues. We'll see if anyone maybe breaks in this year.
Now, Logan, before we go any farther, before I get into sort of the rest of the roster and where they stand right now for you, you are going to, as I understand it, be down in Goodyear and actually a part of a broadcast down there, no?
I will be, yes. So on March 14th, Cleveland will be playing two games. One of them will be against the Seattle Mariners, and that's big league squad against big league squad. Then after that, a couple hours later, Cleveland's going to play in MLB's second spring breakout. So for those unfamiliar with what the spring breakout is, they just started it last year. Every team plays at least one game. Cleveland played one last year against Cincinnati. We're facing Seattle this year. And it's basically a prospect all-star team, prospects from all minor league levels for one team facing another. So it's going to be a Guardians prospect all-star team facing a Mariners prospect all-star team in Goodyear. I'm honored to say that I'll be on the call for that broadcast on Cleveland's MLB.com audio stream, and I will be alongside both of the Akron Rubber Ducks broadcasters as well. So that's going to be pretty exciting, seeing, you know, captains, Rubber Ducks, former, current, you name it, all on one team representing the Guardians on a pretty big stage. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no doubt. So MLB.com for the Guardians, their audio stream, where they can find that, correct?
You got it.
All right. And well, you want to make sure you check out Logan there as well. Logan, getting back to where the Guardians are at right now, left field is what I would consider a mess, but not in the worst way in the world. I mean, we're coming off an ALCS. I don't like to call a position a mess. I feel like you're in a pretty good spot, but it's as close as you get to a team as good as the Guardians right now. A lot of different avenues they could go. As we look at left field, is it more likely for you that someone emerges as a guy who's going to take a majority of games out there, or that you again go into a more of a route of you're basically going to platoon left field from the start to the finish of the year?
I'll say that's a great question. Now, in terms of me looking at first glance, not sure if you were talking left or right field, because
right field,
I do
yeah.
know that. Oh, okay, yeah,
left field would be a heck of a platoon if you take Stephen Kwan out of there. That'd be really interesting, now, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But no, I knew exactly what you were ultimately getting at there. But yeah, that's really that third battle, I think, for like going into spring training. You had second baseman primarily number one, and then that back end of the starting rotation, and then that right field spot. A couple of options there, Will Brennan, John Kenzie Noel, potentially, but a name that comes to mind for me, if he stays healthy, that's the million-dollar thing right there. If his feet can stay healthy, Chase DeLauder is one of your top prospects. He's been for the past couple years. If his health remains good, he's really somebody I think should be making their big league debut this year and could make it in a big way. He has a lot of potential, great frame. He's about 6'3", 235. got a unique left-handed swing, and boy, if he makes solid contact with the ball, good luck finding it sometimes, just kind of the way it is with him. So those are, I would say, three names to be on the lookout for. And then, I mean, you also have somebody like Daniel Schneeman, rotational guy, utility guy. He's also played some right field as well. I'm curious there. How is that position going to fare? Because I know a lot of people following Guardians prospects in the minor league ranks, they can't wait to see Chase DeLauder put on a major league uniform for Cleveland, and me neither. See him in Lake County in 2023, and he lived up to all the hype and then some for sure.
Yeah, I would be in that list of people very excited to see Chase DeLauder actually get to suit up for the Guards. But you mentioned health going to be very important for him. Circling back, a question I actually meant to ask you and completely forgot. John Means being added to this team. Obviously, David Fry going to the 60-day IL given his elbow issue. It adds room for Means to be added as he still has time to get to, I think they said, an August return. How much of an impact do you think a guy like that could make sort of late in the year as almost a Matthew Boyd type, but with a what might be considered a higher ceiling given what he's done in his career?
I was going to say great minds think alike for sure, because as soon as you said John Means, I could kind of see where you're going. That Matthew Boyd comparison, I think, very much holds true because he's a veteran guy. He's had a couple of good seasons in his major league career. It's just been the injury bug, unfortunately, that's kind of held him back some, because over the past three seasons, he's made just a combined 10 starts. And, you know, his strikeout-to-walk ratio in his two very full seasons, those are 2019 and 2021 with Baltimore, impressive. Go back to 2019 with the Orioles, 121 strikeouts, 38 walks. Go 2 years later, I mean, 2020 was shortened because of the COVID year, and he had 42 strikeouts to 7 walks. Go to 2021, 134 strikeouts to just 26 walks. So if he can bring that kind of command and fair strikeout ability as well, and also giving a pretty stable left-hander in that rotation as well, you could have potentially two left-hand arms that come to mind. You have John Means, more of a veteran guy, who, if he could stay healthy, like we've been talking about, could make a pretty significant impact at his best. And then you also have a young guy like Joey Cantillo, who just made a spring start today and ended up faring very well in his couple of innings of work. Just allowed one hit, no runs, no walks, struck out three in two innings. So looking forward to seeing, like, again, what that end of the rotation can look like, because he was one of those pitchers we were discussing a bit earlier on that the team went out, signed this offseason to see if we can get some of that prime ability out of him that he has certainly once showed.
Logan, always good to talk to you. I hope you enjoy your time in Goodyear. Enjoy the game. Have a good call. If anybody wants to listen to it, MLB.com, the Guardians AudioCast. That's March 14th at 8:05. You can catch Logan there, and I'm sure you're not going to find anybody better to give you all the information on the prospects within the game than Logan. He's the best, and I appreciate you. Jake Volmick with you guys on The Fan. Just got done talking to Logan Batoski, play-by-play broadcaster for the Lake County Captains. He's does some work over for Cleveland Guardians on SI as well. Going to be doing the spring breakout game. Just started within the last 2 years. Logan explained it. If you didn't hear the interview, Odyssey Rewind feature, 923thefan.com. It'll be up there as well. You can go and check that out. You should check that out. Really good interview. But March 14th, 8:05, we'll be able to hear Logan on the call for some of the Guardians' top prospects. We asked him, though, sort of about the direction the Guardians starting pitching was heading and how Tristan McKenzie sort of fit in that mix. You saw Tristan start in the very first spring game for the Guardians, goes two innings, gives up one run on one hit. There's a home run from Elly De La Cruz. Just hung a curveball, right? I mean, how many people have given up a home run to Elly De La Cruz? Enough. I'll tell you that. Enough people have given up a home run to Elly. So as you look at that, it's like, okay, Tristan clearly struggled, and the curveball was one of the things he struggled with, but when you talk command and you talk fastball, those are the two biggest things. Last year, if you asked me what were Tristan's basically fails as a starting pitcher, right? What held him back? I would say, the fastball was getting absolutely killed. That was a major issue. It had no life. It was flat. Wasn't a ton of velo on it. and it was getting just pounded out of the yard. And the other thing would have been control. And overall, you looked at what Tristan did in his first game. Logan mentioned it several times, I think four times, getting up to 94. It's a good place to be. And as well, add a couple of strikeouts. You give up one hit through two innings. You feel pretty good. Those early innings throughout last year were a problem for Tristan. And, I mean, listen, Tristan McKenzie, we've been sort of up and down with him. I don't even know how exactly to feel if he were to start or be in the starting rotation. I mean, he's not starting opening day, but to be in the starting rotation, I would be kind of in between. Because you've gone through some really good moments with him. You've also gone through some really bad moments. The last 2 years specifically have just been terrible. Right? Because obviously, 2023, he gets hurt. He wasn't pitching well before he got hurt. And then 2024 rolls around, and you tried to give him a leash. You gave him plenty long of a leash. So he'd go 16 starts, in which he had an ERA over 5. And it's just wild the in-between that you got from 2022 to 2024. Obviously, the UCL injury going to be a major factor. But he just never got back to nearly where he was and didn't go through Tommy John, tried to avoid it. And I think that leaves sort of a sour taste in our mouth about Tristan McKenzie and his future with the Guardians. Because I look at it and I said, well, you probably, and it's not my job to say what Tristan can or cannot do as surgeries, but if it were me, I would think with how many Tommy Johns have been gone through, and I know it's going to be a contract year for him, but like how many times and how many guys have now gone through Tommy John and just came back better on the other side, probably should just go get the surgery. Probably in the best interest to have that surgery done for you to come back, but he elected not to, and again, I think a lot of Guardians fans looked at that and said, okay, that's up to you, but if you don't come back strong, that's an issue. And he came back probably weaker than we've ever seen him. And that's where you draw the issues, is, okay, what can we now expect to see from Tristan McKenzie? Because you don't have a good sample size of him being utterly dominant. Really, I mean, it was a great season in 2022, but that's all you're really banking off of. And it was 11-11 as the record goes, but we all know that's not the best metric to judge pitching on. Like the ERA up near a 5, had a lot of strikeouts, didn't deal with so much of a trouble with the walks, 190 to 44, excuse me. Like, he had a very good year across 30 starts. Guardians fans were through the moon about what Tristan could become. I mean, we were walking into 2023 legitimately asking the question of whether or not Tristan could be sort of that next ace up after a Shane Bieber. And unfortunately, those conversations went away very quickly. And just the way that the Guardians tried to stick it out with Tristan last year and kept him active, again, just a sour taste overall. That now I head into this year thinking to myself, is that even somebody that I want back ready to roll on the starting rotation? Am I going to be able to trust him as he starts a game at the major league level? And I guess the only answer I would have to it would be, what other options do you have? Giving Tristan a chance legitimately can't be one of the worst scenarios that you walk into. Right, when your other options are, okay, you signed Slade Ciccone and Jacob Junis. Or you could go Logan Allen or Joey Cantillo. It's not far out. I could look at any of those guys and I ask the same question for a different reason than I ask with Tristan, which is, what on earth are you bringing to the table? What are you giving me? Because it's not going to be a ton. It is just going to be probably a rather disappointing expectation, and we're looking for a surprise. And if anybody's going to be able to surprise you in that stretch, you'd probably like to think that Tristan McKenzie's your guy. And if Stephen Vogt is speaking very highly of him, the thing that I think we've come to learn very quickly is that Stephen Vogt's not afraid, I'm not going to say toss you under the bus, but he's not afraid to tell you what he really thinks. If he truly doesn't believe in Tristan McKenzie or the stuff that he put out, you would know it. He's not going to say, hey, he's garbage, but he's going to tell you he didn't have his best stuff. He's not going to mince words in that relate, in that relation to how well he performed. If he truly thinks that he looked really good, I believe him. And that was honestly something we couldn't say about Tristan probably through all of last year. Is that a stretch? I don't even know that he had a great game last year that you looked at. And even if it was four or five innings and you said, wow, Tristan's really back. So two innings of good baseball, two innings of truly good baseball on the mound is at least a step in the right direction. You have to feel good about where he's at compared to what you got last year. I don't think he walked out. He walked out of one outing against the Chicago White Sox scoreless. And it was his second start of the year. Other than that, I mean, he was giving up runs. And especially towards the back end of the year, like in the final month, the last few games he pitched in June, he had an ERA of a 9.33. You want to talk about a pitcher in the blender, it was Tristan McKenzie. But if I get two great innings out of you, where you actually look like you have velocity, and you look like you could push farther, yeah, it doesn't take a lot to sort of break into my starting rotation right now. I think Tristan's probably the front runner of guys outside of probably your top three, I think would be a fair place to put it. Between Tanner Bibee, Gavin Williams, and Luis Ortiz, you're looking for four and five. Tristan McKenzie might be the leader in that group. He might be the guy that actually stands out as, okay, yeah, we probably have to give him a shot. Because as bad as you were last year, if you come out and show me something in spring training, which again, we have like a whole nother month, it is a conversation that is ongoing. But if you come out and actually show me something and get through a majority of these starts, and maybe at some point, you know, extend that out to four, five innings, and they let you go a little bit longer and you show some length. I'm looking at Tristan McKenzie thinking, all right, how much worse could it get? And if you're bad and you get into the majors and we get into the season and you look really bad, well, I got about six other options I can turn to. It's not going to hurt me to throw you out there for a handful of starts just to see what you have, as long as the rest of spring goes well. It's the guy that they're probably tied to most as wanting to succeed. They have high expectations for Tristan McKenzie, as do the fans. So if you're going to get somebody to do it and actually step up, Tristan's the guy I'm looking to. I'm going to have my eye on him as spring training goes, as I would encourage all of you to do as well. You have to. You have to look at Tristan McKenzie and try to erase the negativity attached to him from last year. All right, let's leave that there. Coming up in about 4 minutes, some more negative reports surrounding Shedeur Sanders. And I want to know whether or not these ones, they tend to scare you. Do the negative reports around Shedeur Sanders scare you? 216-474-0092. You can also get to me on X at Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C, Jake. It's Overtime with Jake Volnick right here on The Fan. From the NFL Combine to free agency ahead, Daryl Ryder and Andy Baskin discuss the latest rumors and storylines around the Browns offseason with their podcast, It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. Subscribe to the podcast now at 923thefan.com, on the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. It's Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. And asking you, 216-474-0092, did negative reports about Shedeur Sanders scare you? Right? Because we've heard a million of them. Honestly, the wild thing, okay? Something that I tend to enjoy doing is responding to people on social media. Listen, I don't have a very big following, okay? I feel like it's the least I can do. I can give you a little response if I feel like it, right? I'll pick out a few. I'll respond to them. I had a guy try to tell me, and I mean a lot of messages on social media, that Shedeur Sanders was basically garbage, courtesy of the quarterback big board, that he wasn't even like a top 60 prospect, which is just blatantly wild. And there was reports out there of putting Shedeur down, okay? Putting Shedeur, he found several reports putting Shedeur in a lower range than I'd believe him to be at. I could find, again, like five reports going the other way. as easy as you could find five to prove your claim, I could find five to prove my claim. But they mean a little bit more when they come from trusted sources, right? People that you have, I think, a pretty strong belief in. And you believe a lot of what they say. Well, that was true for when Baskin and Phelps brought on Trevor Sikkema, the lead NFL draft analyst for PFF earlier today. And, well, he was not so kind to the people who maybe wanted to hear kind words about Shador himself.
I think that he has a really high floor as a prospect. I think that he understands the game very well. I think he understands how to read defenses already. He understands how to play the position of quarterback at a very high level, as you would expect with somebody who's grown up around the game. But I'm worried about the overall arm talent and the lack of mobility. I really am. He's not somebody who brings a lot of athleticism to the position. He's just not a mobile guy. He'll hold on to the ball a little bit too long. He doesn't have that escapability at the college level, and it only gets worse at the NFL level. Then you go to the arm talent. I think the arm talent is adequate, but I'm not drafting a guy with adequate arm talent at number two overall. I think that he can be a very solid, you know, ranked 12 to 24 type of a quarterback in this league year in and year out. I think he can be one of those mid-tier starters, but I just don't think that he's got the arm talent to match up against these alien quarterbacks that you have to beat to win a Super Bowl. There's just too many more talented quarterbacks in this league for me to draft what I believe is more of just an adequate arm talent player in Shador Sanders in the top three.
So, like, I understand that maybe Shador doesn't show you the most flashy of things. But listen, to say that you have to be sort of in that top tier to go out and compete, yes, would I love my quarterback to be there? I would. Do I also understand that NFL draft analysts at the end of the day are all going to have varying opinions on a lot of these guys? I also understand that. I just can't write off Shador Sanders right off the rip and say he doesn't have what it takes to be a top five quarterback. I would argue that most of the guys you look at, you'd probably assume don't have what it takes to be a top five quarterback. Okay, we were looking at Jaden Daniels last year like, oh, this is the guy that every time he tries to run the football, gets killed. He gets laid out. And it's taking some of the biggest hits. He's not going to be able to do that when he gets to the pro level. And he had no problem this year. Zero adjustment to the pros. He walked in and dominated. He's not a guy that I looked at and been like, oh, yeah, easily, top five quarterback, going to have you competing. And I understand he's in the NFC as well. But even step over to the AFC, I can't just avoid drafting every single quarterback who I don't think gets me to play at the level of Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. I get that's what I'm up against. I know that. I also can't just assume that every quarterback prospect who doesn't present the opportunity to be that or the promise to be that can't be in that conversation. Again, as I go through and look at quarterbacks, I'm looking for what fits in Kevin Stefanski's offense because I don't necessarily, I would love to end up with a top five guy like that, but they're not just floating around. These aren't easy prospects to identify. Teams sit around, like the Browns, for 20, 30 years trying to find that guy. And a lot of times don't end up actually getting to find that elite-level quarterback, right? You might find a franchise guy, but to get you to a top-five guy, a guy that can truly bring you to a Super Bowl, is a different conversation. You are in a different realm trying to get to that. And I can't just avoid everyone who's not. I mean, you look at the Eagles this year, Jalen Hurts is not a top-five quarterback. They got to the Super Bowl and then dominated Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. Again, proving to you that you don't necessarily just need one of the top guys in order to succeed. You can look at schemes. You can look at the talent around these teams and base some of the effect and the ability to win off of that as well. And I think if you're the Browns and you're going through this and right now, obviously making the picks, you're building an offense for Kevin Stefanski. That's the assumption you're rolling under. A Kevin Stefanski offense does not necessarily need the elite of the elite, a top five quarterback to succeed. Again, I'm not telling you I don't want one. I'm telling you I can't just build a team under the idea that he's going to be that. And if that's what you think you're getting with every number two pick, I'd be sadly mistaken. You'd be sadly mistaken. I'd be sad to tell you that that's the case. You can't go into every draft assuming that the top pick is going to be that caliber. It's just not the reality that we live in. right? Like, you have to go through this and understand that some draft classes are just better than others. This might be a year where, well, the draft class just isn't as strong. From top to bottom, I think that would be the overwhelming consensus of this class, is that it's just not as good as years past. Okay, doesn't mean you don't take your shot at quarterback. It doesn't mean that I'm going to be scared hearing people that aren't entirely high on a Shedeur Sanders. And because we think that a number two pick should be a franchise-level changing player, a guy who walks in and is immediately the best player in the NFL or among that conversation, because that's what we've been handed the last few years, or elite prospects, talent we've never seen before. The difference between a number two pick this year and a number one, like 10 pick last year, I don't think it's all that high. I don't think it's all that crazy. I mean, you take the quarterbacks of last year and just the fact they were in the top three, you're already pushing down prospects like Abdul Carter's not jumping into that mix with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May there. He would at best be the fourth prospect off the board. Easily. So again, I just don't think it's that crazy. If I'm willing to use a pick within the top 10 on a guy, which you look at Shedeur Sanders, and I think a lot of people probably fall in that same range with him, is that, yeah, he probably would have gone in the top 10 last year. It's where I look at Shedeur. It's what I've heard a lot of other people put him, is that he would have been sort of a top 5 to 6 quarterback, which puts you in the top 10 to 15 range around a Bo Nix. There were questions surrounding Bo Nix. A lot of people didn't think he would succeed, right? Our very own, who commonly joins us, Lance Reisland, very smart football mind, not confident in Bo Nix. It's not like it stopped the Denver Broncos from drafting a quarterback they saw that could help them into the future. I think if you're scared about reports like this, one, you probably don't have faith in the guy who you're looking to draft. But two, you're expecting the number two pick to be this immediately just top player, top quarterback in the NFL, put you in a rare category that's not there this year, and you really don't know that's there next year. Right? That's why I love all the hype that surrounds Arch Manning. What has Arch Manning done in his college career? Arch has not shown you really anything for you to say, I want to go and get that kid at the college level. He is hands down going to be an elite player. He really hasn't. I'm not saying he's not. He holds the last name Manning. But you're just going after a kid who hasn't shown you a ton. He's had a few starts at Texas, and that's really it. Dom doesn't seem to agree with that. You like what you've seen out of Arch, Dom? I'm not saying I haven't.
Well, so in a kid like that who's kind of been buried behind great talent and yours, you kind of got to trust the stars on his recruiting. And then, but we have seen him play a little bit, yep. And it's kind of like what we saw with Drew Aller at Penn State, where we kind of knew, oh, okay, this kid's going to be a top draft prospect, and I don't know where he's going to line in next year's draft. I'm sure he'll be one of the top 2-3 QBs in that draft, but we knew when he won a game against Purdue his freshman year, like, hey, this Drew Aller kid's good. We knew that with Manning this year, where we saw some glimpses like, hey, this kid just beat an SEC team as a backup, as a starter. I think you can kind of bank that he's going to be an NFL talent. I think this year, I think you got to push for him, really. I don't know. I think he shows glimpse, and he has all the intangibles that even if he isn't the star that he should be this year, I think he will be.
But my point is, like, if you're going to just essentially be like, okay, tank for next year because we want to go get Arch. He's beaten his time as a starter. He's taken down, or at least in games where he's thrown more than 10 attempts. He's beat UTSA.
Good team.
Louisiana Monroe.
Not so good. They had a good year.
They beat him 51-3. It's Texas.
That's a good team.
It's Texas. A lot of talent sitting around that team. A lot more than UOM.
Same with Monroe.
Mississippi State. Who, if you want to say anything, Dom, we just had an off-air conversation about Mississippi State, about how bad they are.
I can defend UTSA, and I can defend Louisiana Monroe, but I cannot defend Mississippi State.
But those are the only teams he's beaten, which I could make the argument to you, any quarterback could step in and look really good against those teams. My point just being, you can't just ignore completely the conversation surrounding Shedeur Sanders just because there's negative reports. 216-474-0092. Do negative reports against Shedeur Sanders scare you? Let's go out to the phones. Let's talk to Anthony is in Cleveland. What's going on, Anthony?
What's going on, my man? I'm just going to ask this one question for everybody. Tell me what Tom Brady did in college.
Well, I mean, he didn't do a whole lot, but he was also a six-round pick.
So then why are we complaining about dudes that are possible number one picks that did way more than Tom Brady, and we haven't seen these guys get on a professional field yet? Can we talk trash about people when they step into their, you know, their field of vision so we can see what they can really do? I kind of feel like we're jumping the gun by saying this draft class is weak. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it, because I'm watching the football games and they don't look weak to me. They're winning. They're doing phenomenal things on the field for their era of football. So let's let these guys play and give these guys a chance and see what they're going to do when they come to the league. Now, if they suck, then let's talk trash about them after they suck. You know, that's just my personal opinion. I don't get what's up with all the talk across the board. I hear it on podcasts. I hear it on TV. I'm hearing it on the radio. Oh, this is a weak class. It's like, okay, and Tom Brady's a six-time Super Bowl champion, and he did nothing. So, you know, what do we say?
Yeah, I think it's just the way, honestly, Anthony, I appreciate the call. It's just the way that you have a conversation about these guys before they're drafted. You look at the prospects and what you think they can become, and you say, okay, the likelihood is this is a weak class. Like Tom Brady is an example that I hate to throw out all the time. I hate that example out there because Tom Brady is very much the exception to the rule. Right, you just don't find quarterbacks who turn into the best quarterback in the NFL when they get drafted in the sixth round. He's very much the oddball. But like, I understand your point. It's more of just like you look across the board and you say, okay, these guys, compared to years past and what it looks like they can be, these analysts, all they do is stare at guys coming out of college and what that turns into in the NFL, and that's their entire job.
I hate the Tom Brady example like you, because it's like, oh, well, Tom Brady did. I'm like, yeah, and how many people since?
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Big zero.
Zilch, you know?
Close to it,
I mean,
least.
I mean Purdy, but yeah. Like...
Shanahan offense.
I too can be successful in that offense, just handing the ball off.
Yeah, I mean, if I can complete a slant pass, which, by the way, is still very much in question whether or not I'd be able to, but like, if I can do that, you're pretty good in a Shanahan offense.
You'd be playing an NFC Championship game every year.
I might have a chance. Might have an opportunity. Put Christian McCaffrey with me. Might have a chance if he stays healthy. All right, coming up in a few minutes, get a grip, as we always do. A whole lot more down the back half of the show as well, including a little bit of point about the Combine. What are we doing? It's Jake Volnick with you guys right here on The Fan.